The Sicha Chelik Tesayin. Look at the Sichas, Volume 16, the first Sicha of Purim, Part 2, starting from chapter, paragraph, section, however you want to call it, Seif Yud. So we explained in the first part of the Sicha that there's a difference between Mordechai and Esther. Mordechai was part of the request that came together with Esther. He joined Esther in the request to set the days of Purim as days of remembrance of the miracle. But he didn't join Esther in the request to have Purim written down in a physical way with ink on parchment and to have it as part of the 24 holy books. He accepted that request of Esther, being a member of the Sanhedrin of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola that needed to accept that. And we explained that the reason for the difference is because Mordechai was more on the side, he had the role of the one doing the spirituality behind the miracle, getting the Jews to do tshuva and so on, whereas Esther was the one who was actually carrying out the hishtadlus, the physical activities that were to be the catalyst and to be the vehicle for the nest to happen. Therefore, she wanted to see it. She looked at it from the perspective of how it affected the world, and she wanted it, therefore, to be in a more tangible way, in a written form of the Megillah. Each of them had their perspective. This concept we can also see. See, if Yud says the Rebbe, this see we also to explain this in the signoin, in the style of Hasidic teachings. So we're going to talk about it a little bit Kabbalistically. Don't get thrown off by the Kabbalah words here, Kabbalistic words, because it's going to, the Rebbe is going as another 10 chapters here, 10 Se'ifim, to explain beautifully, I mean, I hope that I understand it enough to explain it, Mordechai and Esther and so on. Okay, so Mordechai is the Dargis, the Madrega of Yesod Abba. Abba means father. The essence of the father. Father in Sfiris is Chochmah. And there in that level, we talk about Chochmah, the main item, its main specialty and strength is light, Eir. In other words, it's a flash of inspiration. That's what Chochmah is. So there in Chochmah, there's less tangibility felt. Chochmah is more the flash of inspiration of light. So in Sfiris, Chochmah is that first Sphira, that first place where there's the most intense revelation of light. Esther, however, represents the last of the 10 spheres, which is the Sphira of Malchus. She's a queen. The Sphira of Malchus. Malchus, not just Malchus the way it is at the end of the spheres of Atzilus, the highest world, but Malchus also, as Malchus becomes the first step into going into the worlds of Bia, of Bria, Yetzira, and Asiya. And we see this in the name Esther itself, because the name Esther denotes, we know the Gemara says, where do we see the concept of the name of Esther in the Torah? So in the end of the book of Devarim, it says, Va'anechi haster aster espana, I will hide my face on that day when the Jews leave God, and many negative things will happen. That word, haster aster, is the same word as Esther. By the way, the Rebbe reminds us that the Baal Shem Tov explained what is haster aster. It's a double hiddenness. The double hiddenness is that it's so hidden, Hashem is so hidden, that nobody even notices that Hashem is hidden. That's an even worse hidingness. When people are looking for Hashem because he's hidden, at least they're remembering Hashem. When nobody's even looking for Hashem, it's hidden that he's hidden. It's a double hiding. But at any rate, that's in the name Esther. So Esther denotes where the revelation, where the light already comes in a way that it's concealed and covered over. In that space, in that experience, in that sphera, Malchus, what's most important is the receptacle, the way that the light, which has come down and been tapered and so to speak concealed as it goes down from Chochmah, it goes down through all the spheres till it comes to Malchus. And Malchus' main thing is how it's going to be perceived and passed onwards to the lower world. So what's most important there is the vessel, which one of the things of a vessel is, if I want to drink water, I need to have a vessel. The vessel enables me to be able to drink from it. So here, one of the concepts here is that the Malchus, because it's about transmitting the light that's coming from Chochmah all the way through Atzilus into the next world, the main thing there is the Kelim, and that is the receptacle, the way it is able to be assimilated into the lower levels. So if we translate that now back to the way that the miracle of Purim is from the perspective of light versus the way Purim is perspective of Kelim, Mordechai being Ur, Esther being Kelim, so this is how it's going to translate. The miracle of Purim, since it was a miracle that was fully clothed in the vestments of nature, it wasn't the sea splitting, so you have two extremes in this. On one hand, because the miracle was all comprised of natural moving parts, look at all the components of the Megillah, the fact that Esther was the queen and the fact that Vashti was killed, nothing supernatural about each individual component of the story. It was all in nature. You couldn't see anything that was like, UFOs landing from the moon on Earth. Nothing like that happened. What happened? So from this we understand that the miracle that took place was a miracle that was associated with the level of Hashem's light that is fully concealed and contained within the vessels of this world. On the other hand, hey, this was a big miracle that took place. In other words, there was a revelation of godliness because all of these components of natural things came together in a beautiful tapestry. And you were able to see literally that all these natural things that took place were coordinated and orchestrated directly and immaculately by Hashem. So from this we understand that the source of this miracle was from a godly light that's above nature. And more than that, the fact that this godly supernal light of creating this perfectly orchestrated miracle can actually come down in a way that it's imperceptible that it's a miracle, all the components were actually natural. Oh, this even shows it comes from a higher place. In other words, this is a miracle that's not limited to being bells and whistles, so to speak. This is a miracle that's so high that it can even come down without revealing itself. It can be hidden in the garments of nature. And this is the difference between the miracle of Purim, the way you look at it from the perspective of the light that's coming to the world through this miracle, or the way you look at it from the perspective of the vehicle of nature that was used to orchestrate this miracle. In other words, the way the miracle was from its source, it had to be Hashem intervening to all that all the details should come together in a miraculous way. However, if you look at it from the perspective of the natural components that it was comprised of, so you saw that everything was actually natural. But really, what was happening with that natural was, you saw it was actually in its core supernatural. Because all those natural things were happening and being put together and being carried out in a way that left no other choice but say, wow, this is the hand of God. So really, what is the purpose of a miracle? The purpose of a miracle is to elevate the physical, to show that nature is not really nature. So in that sense, the miracle of Purim was a great miracle. And it elevated the physicality of the world, because those things that indeed were natural events, all, look at all the components of the miracle of Purim, all natural. But you saw in them, wow, they're really supernatural, because the way they all came together and they all created the whole mosaic of the miracle. So, Sif 11, this is the difference between Mordechai and Esther. Mordechai represents that flash of inspiration, that light. So by him, the main thing of the miracle of Purim is not that the physicality becomes refined and we reveal that the physical is actually a tool of the supernatural. No, but he looks at it the way it is from the perspective of the light, of Hashem's light shining down. That, wow, through this miracle, we see the unlimited, infinite light of Hashem coming and being revealed in this world. Look at this miraculous thing that took place. However, and that's why when he wants Mordechai's, from Mordechai's perspective, remembering the miracle doesn't have to come down into something tangible like having a written Megillah. It's enough that the remembrance of the miracle will be done in the physical world through the mitzvahs of physicality. But the actual remembrance of the miracle, the actual expression of talking about the miracle, it's enough if it's just in our minds. We can read the Megillah, we can talk about the story. It doesn't have to actually be in a physical scroll. And that's why, also, this concept where Mordechai and Esther join together and talk about just remembering the concept of Purim, not talking about the tangibility of the Megillah, this is the Gemara Yerushalmi. Because remember, the difference between Bavli and Yerushalmi is Yerushalmi speaks factually, speaks in a way. The Gemara, the Babylonian Talmud, is well known to be going back and forth, and questions and answers and deductions and contradictions. Very, 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 very based on back and forth questions and answers and so on. The Rishalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, is based more on sharing information of Torah. It's more like it's like light that just shines brightly. So this is why Mordechai's perspective is being expressed in the Gemara Yerushalmi. However, when you look at the perspective of Esther, which we said, Esther represents the level of Malchus, the level of hiddenness, the level where the light of God descends into the worlds, right, and in a hidden way, in a concealed way. So for her perspective, the main thing is, do you see that all this concealment, that all these physical components are actually expressing, they're serving in God's supernatural sequence of events? In other words, it's refining, and it's she was excited to from her perspective, to show how the veneer, so to speak, of the physicality, of the nature of these components of the story actually are exposed, to show that they're actually part of Hashem's plan. They're actually part of Hashem's supernatural plan. And therefore, she wants that this should be exposed in the most tangible way possible by writing and reading the Megillah in tangible words, on parchment, and so on. Because that's the whole point of the miracle from her perspective. Kalim, looking from the vessel side, it's to show how, yes, the light is concealed. It looks like something natural, but you see that this natural, when you look at it from the perspective of everything that's going on together, it's actually part of Hashem's supernatural. And that's why this is also brought. So Esther is the one who pushes for the tangibility of the Megillah, be written and put on a scroll, and be one of the 24 books of holy books. That's why, says the Rebbe, that's why it's in the Talmud Bavli. The Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud, is a place where you get to the light by first going and pushing away and investigating and looking very deeply at all the details of questions and answers and so on, which is representative of Kalim, of the like the vessels, to refine the darkness and find within the darkness that actually there's the glimmer of light, the light that really it expresses. Chapter 12, Sifti Yud Beis, according to this, we'll also understand why Esther is compared to Shachar. Remember we said that that's Dovra Mel says Lam Natzeach. This is a song Alayelas Hashachar for the dawn. What's the dawn? Esther is called Shachar because just like the Shachar, the dawn, as the Gemara said, is the end of the night. Also, Esther is the end of all the miracles. How is that connected with the fact that, and that's why the Book of Esther was written, unlike Hanukkah. Hanukkah was already post. It was already not a miracle that was written. Esther is considered the end of the written miracles. This that the Gemara compares the end of the night to the end of all the miracles. Now, if you think about it, miracles on night are actually diametrically opposed. Because, as the Marsha asks, you talk about miracles, a burst of light. So why are we talking about Esther coming like at the end of the dark? At dark, dark is dark, where there's no revelation of God. Dawn is already a revelation of light. So says the Rebbe like this. As we said earlier, the purpose of a miracle is that nature should be exposed and change to show that it's actually a vehicle and a tool to reveal godliness. So nature in itself looks dark. It looks like it has its own random operating system, which is not directed by God per se. Comes along a miracle and creates a perfect symmetry and a perfect cooperation in Hashem's plan, and all of a sudden see, wow, this is not night. This is dawn. This is light. And Esther is the end of all these miracles. She is, in other words, not the, let's not read it as being the end. She's the purpose, the reason for, the end reason, the ultimate reason for all the miracles. The ultimate reason for all the miracles is to remove the facade, remove the veneer of the concealment of the world. And this miracle of Esther has an effect not just on the regular darkness. Which regular darkness could be close to light? Which would represent things of physicality that are more subtle, more refined, more edel. Now we say that the Shachar, when does dawn come? When is this miracle of Esther come? It's the end of the night. When the darkness is at its highest point, at its deepest, most blackest point, which represents the lowest realms of physicality, that's where, which you would think has no connection to light, that's where the light of Esther shines. By the way, the Rebbe quotes here that from a Maimon of the Alter Rebbe and the Tzemach Tzedek, that the last point of the night is the darkness, because the it's not brought here in the Sicha, but in the footnote he sends to the Eirat Torah of the Tzemach Tzedek, and he says that at the end of the night, when the moon and stars don't shine, and you don't yet have the sun, that's when the dawn breaks. So right before dawn breaks, it's the darkness. So that represents that this miracle is coming at the end. It's the ultimate miracle, because it's coming in the darkest time, which represents the fact that this godly revelation can shine into the darkest place of physicality, of this physical world that's most distant, the part, the level that's most distant from holiness. And so now we'll understand why this mitzvah, this ness, that dafka, these miracles that were given to be written, they are the miracles that are considered the ones that are able to illuminate the night. Why is that? Because by writing these miracles, they come into a tangible form. In other words, what is writing? In this physical world, the lowest form is inanimate objects, which is writing with ink on a parchment. That's becomes an inanimate object. Right? So those miracles which were written and became part of the holy writings, they are the miracles also that symbolically affect the lowest levels. They can transform the lowest levels of the physical existence. Chapter 13, this also explains why Esther is compared to the dawn. The light of the dawn, which comes out of the night, the end of the night, it really, what you see in it is, from the dark of the night comes the dawn. Where did the dawn come from? It came from the night. It represents the transformation of the darkness. Because you see, the dawn comes from the dark. So that conceptually represents the transformation of dark to light. And actually the word shachar comes from, shachar also means shacharus, darkness, and shachar means light. The shachar is the light that comes out immediately after the deepest darkness. And so it is also in spheres. When we talk about Kabbalistic spheres, the level of shachar, Ayelas HaShachar refers to Knesset Yisrael, the level of the source of Israel, the source of the community of Israel, which is the level of Malchus. And since shachar is the end of night, so we understand that this is the representative of Malchus. Malchus, when we talk about it, Malchus can be talked about as being the end of Atzilus, so it's still in a place of light. We talk about Malchus as Shachar, as dawn, which comes to the end of night. That would be Malchus, the way it is, descendant into the lower levels of Briya Yetzira Asiya. The way it goes down into the concealment of the created worlds. And its purpose is to transform the darkness to light. Again, that's what the morning Amud HaShachar, that's what the dawn does. It transforms the Priya darkness to light. And if Malchus is that, so that's what Malchus is doing. It's descending into the darkness of the world in order to create a transformation of that darkness. Like Esther. Chapter 14. This that Esther transforms the concealment. And the concealment of the world, even though, one second, we said Esther is from the expression of I will surely be hidden. So Esther is hidden. How could she reveal and transform the darkness to light? So it's not just because Mordechai is there to coach her and to inspire her. Because Mordechai is all about light. So you could say that Mordechai is the one that provides the light to Esther to be able to pull off the veneer, even though her name is concealment, but she's able to get the koyach from Mordechai. No. Esther, in her deepest sense, in her source, is also higher totally than concealment. The word Esther, as it is, concealment, that's the external layer of Esther. What's the internal layer of Esther? We know that it says in the Pasuk, by he oimein es hadasa, he calls her Hadassah, he Esther, that's Esther. She has another name, Hadassah. What does Hadassah mean? Hadassah is a reference to tzaddikim. There's another pasuk where we talk about the word Hadassah. It refers to tzaddikim. Whatever quotes from the Gemara. So this shows, and you all know the Hadassim from the Lulav, right? It's good deeds. So Hadassim refers to tzaddikim. So Hadassah, this is Esther. In other words, the inside level of Esther is Hadassah, is a tzaddik. In other words, if you look at Malchus, even from its external, you look at it from the external side, it goes down into the concealment of the world. But it's still bound up with its inner spark, which is the way it is connected to the lights of Atzilus. And this is, if you didn't get all of the Kabbalah, okay, let's though get the end of this section of the Sicha with the Hira that Rebbe says. Here is the teaching we take out from this. For every one of us. Even when a Jew finds himself to be in a place of Hester, of concealment, like the word Esther, yeah, and darkness, shouldn't become Nispol, he shouldn't get affected by it, he shouldn't lose hope. Why? On the contrary. Because deep down, what is the innermost aspect of Esther? Inside Esther, just like Hadassah, Esther, inside Esther, inside the concealment, is higher than Esther, is higher than concealment. And the power which is concealed in that concealment is not just enough, doesn't just give you enough to overcome the concealment and not to fall prey to it, no. It gives you the power to Ibermachen, to transform that concealment to light. The Rebbe is saying that when you find yourself in a place of darkness, in a place of concealment, not just does that situation itself contains enough that you shouldn't fall prey to it, you shouldn't fall captive to it, it also contains what you need to transform that to light. Whew, power, nuclear power. Okay, now the Rebbe goes in an amazing a turn, like now we're going to go up on a super highway. The Rebbe says he's going to go into Shulchan Aruch. Unbelievable. As said many times, says the Rebbe in chapter 15 here. So all the things of the innermost aspect of Torah are also hinted at in Nigla de Torah, the revealed part of Torah, and also in our case. This, what we just said, that in the innermost aspect of a Yid, even though he's in a place of concealment. So inside, there's power that comes from higher than that and gives him the power to overcome the concealment. The Alter Rebbe hints at it in his Shulchan Aruch. In the second version, the first four chapters of the Shulchan Aruch were rewritten again a second time with a second version. I don't recall, perhaps the whole Shulchan Aruch was written. We only have the first four chapters of Shulchan Aruch in their second writing. Okay, we'll soon talk about what's the difference in the first writing and the second writing. At any rate, in the beginning of the laws of getting up in the morning, it says that David HaMelech says, I wake up the dawn. The dawn doesn't wake me up. Always get up before dawn. That's what David HaMelech said. And this is connected with a question that Taz, Turei Zov, one of the main commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, has a question, and we're going to relate it to a difference between the two versions of the Alter Rebbe. I said that there's the second version and there's the first version. There's a difference between the Alter Rebbe brings this pasuk, the first version and the second version. So let's jump into it. Okay. And we're going to be able to explain the differences and nuances here based on what we've explained, what shachar, what the innermost level of shachar means, of dawn. Okay. So, continues the Rebbe like this. The Torah brings in the first chapter of Eira Chaim, brings the following. A person has to get up like a lion in the morning. Be courageous like a lion to get up to serve Hashem. As it says by David HaMelech, it says, you should wake up the dawn and don't let the dawn wake you up. As David HaMelech says, I wake up dawn. Dawn doesn't wake me up. In Shulchan Aruch of Rabbi Yosef Karo, it doesn't say that dawn doesn't wake me up. It just says, you should wake up the dawn. It doesn't say, but the dawn shouldn't wake you up. So the Taz, Turei Zov, usually is giving halachic nuances, commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. Here he gives a comment, and he says like this, what is Shachar? Shachar refers to the holy community of Israel. In other words, the holiness within the Jew. And he says like this, the holiness that's in a Jew, there's two ways that a person gets inspired. There's the I wake up the morning. In other words, I inspire myself. I kind of self-motivate. And then there's the way the Shachar, the Kedusha, wakes me up. In other words, the motivation that comes from above, Hashem's motivation that He gifts me with. And this said, the Taz explains like this. David HaMelech says, I wake up the morning, I self-motivate, I give myself the inspiration. I don't get the inspiration from above. I have such a great motivation. I don't need the help from above, so to speak, that Hashem should reciprocate that motivation. And since that's only applicable to David HaMelech, such a great person, that's why the Rabbi Yosef Karo in the Shulchan Aruch doesn't bring the second part. He just says, you got to wake up early in the morning, I'm going to wake up the morning. Doesn't say the morning won't wake me up, because a regular Jew needs also, he has to self-motivate in the morning, do his part, and then Hashem will send him back down also the awakening. Can't say I don't need it. Only David could say that. So if so, it's still a big question. How are we to understand that? Is there anybody that doesn't need the godly inspiration? We know it says that really the battle is such a fierce battle between the forces of good and evil within a person. If Hashem wouldn't be helping the person, he would never win the battle. Even a tzaddik. It says even about a tzaddik, never trust yourself till the day you pass. So how can somebody say, even David HaMelech, I wake up the morning, my self-motivation is enough, I don't need the motivation from above. Section 17. Now here's something else. The Alter Rebbe in his second writing of this siman, he brings, like the Mechaber, he brings like Rabbi Yosef Karo. Just, you have to wake up in his first writing, first version of the Shulchan Aruch, of these four siman, right? The first version of the first siman, says you have to wake up the morning. Doesn't say about the morning not waking me up. In the second version, he says, you have to wake up the morning, as it says, David HaMelech says, I wake up the morning. I wake up the morning doesn't wake me up. In other words, I'm up before the morning. 1 second. Now we don't understand. Since the second version of writing of the Shulchan Aruch is also something that's meant for everybody, how can the Alter Rebbe bring this thing about I wake up the morning, my inspiration is enough, I don't need the inspiration from above? Wow. More than this, the Lashon of the Alter Rebbe is that Zu Mida Beinonis. This is an average way. That's the language of the Alter Rebbe. Is I wake up the morning doesn't wake me up. And this is Mida Beinonis. This is the middle way. Oh, you're going to get excited now. You know that the Alter Rebbe, when he says Beinoni, 1 second, what does that mean? We're going to talk about this. So, what does it mean when he says that this level, I wake the morning up and the morning doesn't wake me up. This is a regular level. Beinonis, this is for regular people. Hello, we just said that David HaMelech says, I don't need the inspiration from above. Anybody else, of course we need the inspiration from above. What does it mean when the Alter Rebbe brings that continuation as well? Section 18, according to, however, what we explained before, that there's a level called Shachar. The level of Shachar refers to the Malchus, the way it goes down. Knesset Yisrael, right? The source of the souls of Jews, the way, and Malchus, the way it goes down into the concealment of the world. So if so, we can say one second, it's not such a high level. It's a level that's already come down into the worlds. That's what's being called Shachar. So we could say that the Turei Zav, the Taz, is saying like this. I don't need, David HaMelech says, I'm self-motivating. I don't need the inspiration from above. He means I don't need that lower level inspiration that comes from above that's called Shachar. The level that's already come down into the, so to speak, the concealment and confines of the created states of the world, the three lower worlds. Of course I need the higher level. He wasn't saying I don't need the higher level. The level of Shachar I don't need. Higher levels, definitely I need. And the Rebbe says, as we can understand clearly, that it wouldn't be the same kind of help when you wake up beginning of the day, so there's maybe a lower level help. You can't compare that to the help that comes after you daven and after you ask, right, in the rest of the day. Of course we need Hashem's help. He's saying that that immediate help that comes in a lower form called Shachar, that I don't need, said David HaMelech. In other words, says the Rebbe, in the help from above, there's generally three levels. There's the help that comes to protect you from not falling into doing something forbidden. Not indulging in something forbidden. And that level of help comes from a lower level, comes from Shachar. And it comes because the Shachar is something that comes at the end of the night. In other words, the end of the night symbolizes the darkest place, the place of prohibition. The Shachar lights that up. So that's one level of inspiration from above that comes that protects you from the darkness of the night, from the abyss of prohibition, things that are forbidden. Then the second level is the help that comes also to protect yourself from a more nuanced kind of negativity, which is indulging in permissible things. It's also not good to, it's an indulgence. It's permissible things, but it's indulgence. And this comes from Malchus, the way it's not there in the concealment of the world, the way Malchus is as a crown, Atik is the Kabbalistic term, the way it is as a crown to these created worlds, to Bria. And even though it is Laila, it is a form of night, because the worlds of Bia, Bria, Yetzir, Asir, the three lower worlds, are compared to night, but it's it's not the darkness of the night. So this level is a protection from indulgence of permissible things. It's not about lighting up the deep darkness. It's about the more subtle darkness, indulgence in permissible things. The third level of inspiration and help you can get from above is the help that comes to go up in even loftier. The lowest level of inspiration is to protect you from absolute prohibited things. Second level, which we said, is night. The way that Malchus lights up the night is to protect you from permissible indulgences. The third level of inspiration comes from an even higher place. It allows and gives inspiration for going from lofty to lofty to lofty. And that comes from Malchus the way it is in Atzilus. There it's called day. It's not night. Chapter 19. So these three things fit generally to the three classifications we know of Avedas Hashem. There's the service to Hashem of a tzaddik, somebody who's totally righteous. There's the one who's a beinoni who still has a struggle. And there's the Aved of a Rasha who has to struggle with absolute prohibition. As it's explained in Tanya, which is like this. A tzaddik is totally not in the realm of indulgences at all that come from the animal soul. He doesn't have that struggle with indulgences. His work is just, he has work, he has to toil. His toil is by going from higher level to higher level to higher, to keep on advancing in Kedusha itself, in holiness itself. a Beinoni, somebody who still has a struggle. So we say a Beinoni is somebody who cannot do a sin. It's just out of his realm. He's not going to do something forbidden. He does need to have a war, though. He does have a struggle to make sure not to fall into an indulgence of a permissible kind. And then we have the Rasha, the wicked person. His struggle is not to do something prohibited. And he needs to get Hashem's help for that, not to fall into something prohibited. He needs the lower level help, which is coming from a place called Shachar. And you could say that this is the explanation that Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch, when you're looking mitzad from the perspective of the revealed aspect of the Torah, what does a Beinoni mean? Beinoni in the Alter Rebbe, the Tanya, means somebody who does nothing wrong, doesn't think anything wrong, doesn't speak anything wrong. Why is he not a tzaddik? Because he still has impulses. He controls his impulses, but he still has impulses to indulge. So those, right? But in Nigla, in the simple reading of the word Beinoni, it means a guy who's half-half. Right? Somebody has somebody who has a majority good is not half-half. He's a tzaddik. So therefore, in the first version of the Shulchan Aruch, here's the difference between the first and second version of the Shulchan Aruch. The Alter Rebbe wrote his Shulchan Aruch following the decisions of the Poskim, those that explained Halacha in the revealed way of Torah. Then the Alter Rebbe embarked on a new mission to rewrite the Shulchan Aruch in a second version, giving more credence and following the ways of the Mekubalim and the Kabbalists. And we only have the first four chapters. So in the first version of the Shulchan Aruch, there he's writing according to the revealed aspect of Torah, the Gemara and Poskim. So he doesn't bring the continuation. He says, I wake the dawn. He doesn't say the dawn doesn't wake me. In other words, he's not saying I don't need the help of even the lower level of Shachar, because the Beinoni there, the regular person in the first version of the Shulchan Aruch, is a regular person who's half-half. He can't say, I'm self-motivated, I don't need the help, even to protect him from forbidden things, the lower level help. No, he can't. He needs it. However, in the second version of the Shulchan Aruch, where the Alter Rebbe is going according to the Mekubal and the Kabbalists, so once you get into the innermost aspect of Torah and you talk about the regular, the Beinoni is not a half-half guy. The Beinoni also is removed from doing an actual sin. He doesn't need, so he can say, I wake up in the morning, I don't need that level of Shachar, that lower level of inspiration to protect me from falling into sin. I'm already past that. And that's what Alter Rebbe can bring there, the continuation. I wake up the dawn doesn't wake up me, I don't need that level of Shachar. And he says, and this is the Midah Beinis, this is something for a Beinini. He's hinting there at the Beinini, indeed, the way the Beinini is explained in the Tanya. And this, the Alter Rebbe puts in a Shulchan Aruch, which means this is applicable to all. Because after the Alter Rebbe explained in Tanya, what is really a Beinini? So it actually becomes accessible, attainable by everybody. And everybody has to try and be that. So therefore, you can put it in the Shulchan Aruch and say, a Jew can wake up in the morning and says, I'll self-motivate. I don't need the lower level of motivation of inspiration from above to save me from sin. Because a Jew can be a Beinoni and he's already in a different realm. He's not being challenged. He's very firm in his resolve to control his impulses. Section 20. This Inyan, the Alter Rebbe, demands as soon as you get up in the morning. Even before you say Meidani. In other words, even when there's no longer, even when there isn't yet revelation of light, you haven't turned on the lights in yourself yet. You just got up. You just woke up. Saying Meidani, it's still dark. Still, says the Alter Rebbe, the Shulchan Aruch, the Alter Rebbe says it like this, you have to be powerful like a lion, in a way that you motivate. You don't even need the motivation of the level of Shachar from above. You're not going to do a sin. You're strong as straight from the night. You wake up strong and motivated. How could that be? How could a Jew even before he turns on the lights, even in other words, even before he starts up his system and starts serving Hashem, right first thing in the morning. How could you be at that level? The explanation is because a Jew can only be dark in his external part. Bipnimius, in his innermost part, he's higher than the Hester, right? We said that Hester is Adasa. He's higher than the concealment. That's what power we have. Wow. And on the contrary, this situation of having the concealment, this actually inspires us to reveal our innermost aspect of the neshama. Kind of brings out the pnimius of the neshama with a lot more power. And you see, this is expressed by the power that Jews have to have mesiras nefesh, have self-sacrifice. As you see in Esther, what happened in the time of Esther when there was literally a concealment, that whole year when they were standing under the threat of extermination, they stood with a pure mesiras nefesh because there was an option that they could have, the decree was against the Jews. If God forbid, they would have opted out of Judaism, they wouldn't have been attacked. But they didn't. They stood by Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice. And this was for a full year at all time, every day, at every moment, every hour, because when you talk about Mesiras Nefesh, about self-sacrifice, it totally consumes the person. In all of his faculties, in all of his garments, outward garments, thought, speech, and action being the garments. And so it is with the service of each and every one of us to Hashem. The darkness, it's dafka, that darkness that inspires us and that motivates us to reveal and pulls out from us our innermost aspect. And it does so even more than when we're in a circumstance of revelation. In other words, when we meet up with darkness and with challenge, it inspires and pulls out from within us, wakes up within us, the spirit of sacrifice. And this is expressed in the Kabbalah Seil, in this self, in the accepting the yoke of heaven, the obedience that comes from the Etzem and Hashem, the actual Neshama, which totally consumes the person. And because of that, a person can be a Beinoni at all times. Because that's from the night, he wakes up, and from the night he gets inspired to awaken his inner morning. He totally sacrificed to Hashem, totally committed to Hashem, and then he can be a Beinoni. It's not going to be heavy stuff, heavy duty stuff. Bottom line, we may be in an Esther situation, in a concealment, but inside the concealment is the power to not just survive the concealment, to actually overturn, transform the darkness to light. It's been a pleasure. It's a long sicha. All the best.